Right now, let's go to the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, happy Future Tuesday. Boy, with all this Helsinki conversations going on, how would you change the topic?
Yes, we're going to look a little farther and wider and more into the ancient universe and the future of humanity here.
And since we're thinking about Trump, there was
ancient
some
future?
Interesting focus this week on Trump's Space Force.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Remember that? And I wonder what he and Putin were talking about regarding the Space Force.
That was not in the press interviews.
No, okay. It wasn't. What was interesting there for us is that this week we did meet a character, must say, that was in the intelligence world, the U.S. government, who told us that we actually have planes that make the SR-71 look slow. And they can hide behind asteroids, I believe he said.
Okay.
So it makes me wonder how much of the conversation, those 2 hours, were spent about talking about something like that.
Yeah, really. Maybe they just spent the last 10 minutes saying, okay, here's what we're going to tell the press. And 2 hours and more beforehand, they talked about their favorite club on the far side of the moon or something.
Yeah, something like that. I think there are more significant elements than posturing. And some of this has to do with space, I do believe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really an old conversation that always keeps coming around again. Like, who do we have to hate now in order to have our true power in the world? It always comes down to that. Like, somebody always has to be the enemy, or somehow we just don't have anything to talk about, right?
Yeah. So the space program, NASA's administrator is a strong defender of Trump's protocols for space. Like a guy named Jim Bridenstine, he said in an interview that if you look at what space is, it's not much different than the ocean. And he's made 333 aircraft carrier landings as a Navy pilot.
Well, I guess he means strategically, it's not much different than the ocean.
It's an international domain that has commerce that needs to be protected.
Right, and that's what the Navy's all about, right?
Yes.
And yet space is probably currently part of the Air Force. Or I imagine all of the branches of the military have some of their irons in the fire.
Well, the Air Force has lots of space programs, and that's one of the complexities, is that if you start a new branch, then it's another branch that's got to compete for budgets from the Congress and Senate.
Sure.
And you want to have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how many alphabet agencies do we need, right?
Yeah, it's not time to rip the Air Force apart. Some 60 different agencies play roles right now in space-related work. That's quite a snafu to deal with.
Yeah, 60 agencies.
A headache, bureaucratically.
They're probably involved in research, maybe some exploration, some international relationships like this ISS.
They say with every new space regulation, the government has got to consider at least 7 other regulations on average, getting it very complicated. And now with all the private companies pursuing ventures into space, makes it even more complex.
The new Wild West. Except it's not west, it's all around us.
Right. And they say that Trump wants us to come back to the moon and stay there and not leave like we did in 1972 and never come back. Permanent infrastructure cannot be realized without international partners. And the 2-decade U.S.-Russian collaboration on the space station is a pretty strong partnership that has weathered all kinds of tumultuous changes that have gone on in the last couple of decades, including those the tense periods when the sanctions that began after Moscow's annexation of Crimea, yet we're still doing space stuff. China is a little different story. We don't quite have that relationship with them on space.
They're doing their own thing.
Yeah, they're doing their own thing, right. Yes, and since 2011, Congress has prohibited NASA from collaborating with Chinese counterparts.
Just so that they won't get a hold of all of our rocket technology and secrets.
Yeah. And the Space Force, well, I don't know, let's look at it. You know, it's akin to the Navy in a way. Remember, it's Captain Kirk, Captain Picard, and admirals. They're all Navy ranks in space.
Because they're on ships.
Yeah.
Space ships.
Yeah.
They're not on space planes. They're not on space convoys.
It's funny. It goes from planes to... Well, I guess planes are kind of a ship. And yeah. Airships.
Airships.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Semantics, but nonetheless, quite interesting. International territory. Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention that. That's probably our biggest political story this hour.
All right. You want to take a call for a minute from Daddy Bird?
Before we leave politics? Yeah, sure.
All right. Hi, Daddy Bird. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I agree with you about us having to have a current enemy. That's what's going on.
You're right. Yeah. It's kind of sad.
Okay. I like to do the internet, and I believe the internet should be pretty much unrestricted unless you're doing something, I mean, just absolutely illegal.
In which case, then what you're doing illegal should be the problem, not the internet.
Right. Now, there's some argument between how to handle the internet. There's two sides, and it's which side should I be on to...
You're talking about net neutrality?
Yeah. What is that? How does that affect me? Why don't you have a maximum, you know...
Well, net neutrality basically means that we want the internet treated like a utility. We want there to be equal access for everyone who's using it, not preferred access for people who are paying more. And the way it's kind of showing up right now is that we have internet providers like AT&T or some of the other big companies that actually create the infrastructure. And we have people who rent those facilities for their internet services. So, for instance, Netflix. So AT&T and Netflix are competitors in terms of content going through the line. But AT&T, since they own the lines, they don't have to pay a surcharge for it, but Netflix does. So that means that AT&T can choose to invoke policies that will make Netflix business vulnerable to their decisions. And if we were preserving net neutrality, AT&T wouldn't get to do that. They would have to compete on an equal playing field.
You realize you just said evil?
I did, yeah. What was I thinking?
Widely cited example of violation of net neutrality was the internet service provider Comcast when they secretly slowed what they called throttling down uploads from peer-to-peer file sharing programs. Yeah, so they slow down things they don't like or they don't want you to do. Like Comcast or AT&T could slow down people accessing Netflix if they wanted to.
So I'm against net neutrality or I'm for...
Yeah, you're for net neutrality.
I'm for net neutrality.
Yeah, it treats all data on the internet equally and not discriminate or charge differently by user.
Yeah, we don't give data ranking according to who's more important and who's paying more. We treat all data like cars on the highway. They all get to drive as fast as they can.
What was President Obama for? Is he on our side or is he on the other side?
It's a good question. I'm pretty sure
he was for net neutrality on this. Yeah. It's mostly big corporations that run the backbone of the internet that want to be against it.
Yeah, I think the big bad guys are basically Verizon, AT&T, the people who provide the phone services, which have the lines that get used by the internet services for their giant networks.
I remember when Daddy Bush was president, they had that communications law they changed. And they gave the cable TV companies some deal, and then they said, don't worry, it'll go cheaper. And it didn't, it went up. One more thing is in your ad, you says bandwidth. What's bandwidth mean? I think I asked you that, but I still don't know.
When you're online, it's how fast the internet connection speed you have. You know, if you have a fast speed, then that's more bandwidth. Uh-huh. That's the easiest way to understand it.
So you can play movies better that way?
Yeah. You get better movies if you want to do high-definition movies or 3D movies. You need more bandwidth.
Yeah, you know, different kinds of data is different sizes, right? So
email doesn't take so much bandwidth.
Yeah, text is very small. Pictures are bigger than text. Videos are bigger than pictures. So the more stuff you're sending through at one time, the bigger the pipe has to be for it to go through. And that's
like
what bandwidth
water.
Is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Like when
all
we
right.
had more bandwidth in 04, there was a kick up in bandwidth and suddenly we had new services like Skype.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, are you going to do more politics in your program?
Well, no. We're mostly going to do more medical stuff in this hour.
Oh, good. Okay. Well,
yeah.
Especially
the second hour.
Stuff.
Yeah, second hour.
I'll be here listening. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Both of you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right.
So, a new telescope has captured the clearest view yet of our galaxy's center.
That's very exciting.
Isn't that neat?
Tell us about this new telescope.
Yes, it's called Meerkat.
Meerkat.
Meerkat. It's an advanced new radio telescope. It's in South Africa.
All right.
And it really consists of a whole bunch of dishes that all are coordinated to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So an array.
It's an array. That's right. And the array, the first thing they tested out as they brought it online was, well, our own galaxy's center to see what it looks like.
Okay. Let's look at ourselves.
And we have a picture of that.
It's with the meerkat.
Yes. And then we have a new picture of incredible detail of the center of the Milky Way and what it looks like. It's a fiery region. The supermassive black hole is surrounded by a lot of fire and fury.
Well, I guess that must be pretty fast-moving stuff if it's being...
All
know,
kinds of stuff.
Attracted to a black hole.
Yeah, I mean, solar systems being sucked into it. These things called supernova remnants, pieces left over from old stars that blew up. There are mysterious filaments that appeared. That's one of the things our scientists are really curious about. What are these long, bright filaments that seem to be found near the central black hole and nowhere else in the galaxy?
Mm. Yeah,
we originally discovered them in the 1980s, but now we can see them in more detail, remarkably detailed images.
Wow. So if there was an analogy of, say, the Pacific Gyre, right, like the funnel of water that circulates in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Collecting all the plastic.
Collects all of the debris, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You could think of this black hole as being this funnel in the middle of the galaxy that's just attracting all of this debris around it. But the debris that it's collecting is leftover star explosions and...
solar systems and whatever else.
Fiery dust.
Yeah, all collecting by the black hole and then exploding and creating weird structures, some of which are called filaments.
Right.
So we're studying those filaments, and they change color. They're orange, yellow, white for the strongest ones. Mm. We have a nice picture of that. The filaments are about 1,000 light years by 500 light years in size.
Mm.
Huge. And the new telescope, this is just the beginning. They focused it on the center of the Milky Way because that... part of the galaxy is notoriously difficult to observe. Why? Because it lies behind the constellation Sagittarius, and it's enshrouded by clouds of gas and dust.
So we've never had such a good look at the center of our own galaxy before because there's too much stuff in the way.
But Meerkat can detect radio wavelengths that penetrate these clouds. And because it's down in the southern hemisphere, the galaxy's center passes overhead, and it's visible for about 12 hours a day. It's also more sensitive because of all the antennas that create the radio telescope.
All right. So I guess people in the astronomy world are excited. They've got a new toy to play with.
Yes.
The South African.
It's the early days. A lot
meerkat.
Needs to be done to optimize it, but they're stunned already with the first results
as the
meerkat shoots the center of the galaxy.
Great.
Also, in space news, since we're out there, there's a new crop of moons that have been found around Jupiter.
What?
Yeah, we found a new crop of moons. One of them is really weird, too. 10 more moons have been confirmed around Jupiter.
Moons?
Yes.
Boy, I thought Jupiter already had a whole bunch of moons.
Well,
don't they have like
it,
69 moons?
This brings it to 79.
79,
it's
oh boy.
The highest number of moons of any planet in the solar system.
Uh-huh.
And
oh,
these
wow.
new space rocks are really giving us insight as to why the Jupiter system looks like it does today.
Uh-huh. What are we finding out?
Well, the team found, since March 2017, 12 moons.
Since March.
Yeah. This
wow.
Is
so much to find, even in our own solar system.
That's right. This is using the Blanco 4-meter telescope in Chile.
Okay.
Its main goal, they were actually searching for incredibly distant small objects and planets that might be lurking in our solar system beyond Pluto. They're kind of looking for Planet 9. Right.
Oh, really? They were trying to explain
why the
gravity anomalies of...
Yes.
Outer space.
Yes,
uh-huh.
They were trying to really see if they could find something out beyond Pluto.
Right.
But while they were searching the fringe parts of our solar system, the astronomers decided to take a peek at what might be lurking around Jupiter at that time, because Jupiter was right in the same area that they were looking.
Sure.
So that's when they found these new moons.
Wow.
They're all pretty tiny. They're nearly 2 miles wide.
Wait a minute.
Between
a moon
less than
that's a mile wide? Should
yeah.
it be called a moon? That almost sounds like...
an asteroid.
Yeah.
That's the way they orbit.
Oh,
it helps
okay.
determine what they are.
So the fact that they're orbiting Jupiter makes them a moon. Doesn't matter how big they are.
Well, two orbit closer to Jupiter, moving in the same direction as the planet spins. further out from those, about 15 and a half million miles from the planet, there are nine that rotate in the opposite direction, mm-hmm. moving in opposite of Jupiter's rotation.
Mm-hmm.
But in that same distant region, there's one strange moon that is called Valetudo. It's moving with Jupiter's spin, like the two inner moons. That means it's going in the opposite direction of all the other moons in the same area.
Hmm.
It's basically driving down the highway in the wrong direction.
Oh, boy. But it's 15 million miles out, right?
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of room to swerve.
Nonetheless, 15 and a half million miles out. It's an unstable situation. Our astronomers think that head-on collisions are likely to happen in that situation.
Hmm.
And fortunately, Valetudo isn't the only moon that acts that way. There's another one called Carpo that orbits far out from Jupiter and it moving in the opposite direction of the other moons in that area.
Hmm.
But Valetudo orbits much further away than Carpo, and it may actually be the smallest moon Jupiter has.
Hmm.
I think it's good evidence that moon-on-moon collisions have happened in the past and that these are responsible for the lunar landscape around the planet today.
I see.
Yeah, and with Valetudo just a kilometer across, it's probably the last remnant of a much larger moon that's been ground to dust over time.
Yeah, well, Jupiter being such a big gravity well right in the middle of the solar system, it does attract a lot of collisions one way or another.
Yeah, it's a difficult search space, though, because the biggest planet in the solar system, finding moons can be kind of tough. You know, with a telescope, it's like looking through a straw, and you're just covering these little points around Jupiter as you're looking for stuff. Since it's so large, it reflects a whole bunch of light. It's very bright. And that means that there's a lot of glare that makes it hard to see super faint moons around the planet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's still hard to look up at the stars and make sense of it.
But the Blanco telescope.
Even though these things are huge, they're so far away. You can barely see what's there.
Yeah. Blanco is really good at it, though. It's the best telescope we've had for doing these sorts of things. It's really adept at looking at incredibly distant, really faint objects.
Hmm.
So the massive sky surveys beyond Pluto are perfect for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're working on mostly.
Oh, wow.
They just happened to notice that Jupiter was directly overhead.
All right. Well,
it tells the story of Jupiter's past. They're trying to figure out what its story is now. Kind of cool.
I know it's kind of random, but we've got to go to a break.
We've got to go to a break. Okay. All right. So 79 moons around Jupiter with one weirdo that might cause collisions out there.
Okay. That's it. Looking up. Things are definitely looking up. We'll be right back
after
the break.
Okay, got 1 minute before the next break. Okay, well, this should be a one-minute story. New sound wave seismometer studies have found that there's a huge diamond cache deep in the Earth's interior. A study finds that 1% to 2% of the Earth's oldest mantle rocks are made from diamonds. About a quadrillion tons of diamonds hidden in the Earth's interior, according to a new study from MIT. It's not going to send off a diamond rush, though, because these are more than 100 miles below the surface in what are called cratonic roots, which are like inverted mountains below the Earth's mantle. The new study estimates that they may contain 1% to 2% diamond, and the total volume of the roots, quadrillion, 10 to the 16th tons of diamonds scattered in these ancient rocks from 90 to 150 miles below the surface. Pretty amazing,
just discovered?
Huh? Yes. It's from a sound glitch, from analyzing seismic reflections and looking at the speed at which sound is going. They were able to ascertain that it would only be diamonds that would cause the speed anomalies that they were detecting in the seismic studies of the
everywhere we look, there's diamonds. We see diamonds in the sky, diamonds in the galaxy, diamonds 100 miles beneath the Earth.
Yeah.
And right here on KSEO Radio.
Pretty cool. They went through all kinds of possibilities, every angle. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show, Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. I found this quite interesting in the BBC. They had a nice piece called The Tiny Nation Leading a New Space Race. The moon and nearby asteroids could contain untold riches and resources to help further space exploration.
That's not news.
No, that's the preamble.
Oh.
One small country is aiming to take a leading role in this new space race.
Only one?
Well,
at least this small country. Okay.
One you might not expect. A place called Luxembourg.
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 Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I heard it was so small that they had it carpeted. Ba-dum-boom. Next.
Yeah, I know, you came in just as Gregory sent a text on something else here, which I'll get to in a moment.
Okay.
There are now 10 space mining companies, including a company called iSpace, that's legally domiciled in Luxembourg since the launch of their new space resources law in February 2016. And they have a fund worth $223 million for space ventures.
That doesn't go very far in space.
$223 million? Yeah, it's like a launch, maybe two launches, right? Of a SpaceX rocket.
And that's 12 companies trying to spend that money?
Well, 10 space mining companies.
I don't think they're going to go too far.
The moon is one of two primary targets for commercial ventures, and they're eyeing near-Earth asteroids for mining metallic resources.
Mm-hmm.
Now, keep in mind, there are 16,000 near-Earth asteroids.
Oh.
Some of them with a lot of good stuff in there that we might want to
16,000, so they're targeting the most lucrative near-Earth asteroids.
Yes.
Huh?
And they could be rich enough to produce the first trillionaires, according to Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So all they have to do is get their ships out there on that $220 million and grab one of those asteroids, and they'll be rich.
Well, they're hoping. Well, Luxembourg is the second country in the world after the U.S. to put together a legal framework for the exploitation of resources beyond the planet.
Okay. Well, what are they doing?
Said, they have 200 companies interacting with them. They run a space resources initiative. They have a website called spaceresources.lu.
Okay.
And check it out. They have important differences from the U.S. The U.S. requires companies to have a 50% of U.S.-backed equity. While Luxembourg doesn't have that limitation.
You mean to fly to space?
No, to own in the company. In other words, if you're going to work under U.S. law, you have to have at least 50% owned U.S. company.
Uh-huh. But in Luxembourg, you can be anybody. Anybody. Okay.
As the wealthy Grand Duchy, the richest nation in the world, has been accused as a tax haven by many. It does offer a range of tax incentives and benefits. So they would naturally think of places where maybe they can make more money.
Hmm. Okay. So are they offering to not tax the riches if you find
I would say so. Junk? I would say that's part of their thing. They have a much more friendly relationship with money for you. For a U.S.-based firm that counts Richard Branson and
Invest
Google.
Invest your asteroids here in friendly Luxembourg.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the exact equity hasn't been disclosed, but their planetary resources sold a $28 million stake to the Grand Duchy.
Oh, okay. So they've got their 10% interest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Their Space Resources Act has opened a floodgate for investment, and the Ministry of Economy is saying the space industry now accounts for 1.8% of the nation's GDP, which is the highest ratio of any EU company for space.
Any EU country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The space mining is an industry that simultaneously hides ambiguous legal pitfalls of all kinds. It's very, let's say, it's the gray area. They're not clear whether or not space law allows for a country to grant property rights, for example, to natural resources extracted in space.
Hmm. Yes, I imagine there's some debate about that.
And when the U.S. did their world's first mining law in 2015, Russia raised objections.
Oh, so the U.S. was leading with a law.
They have their space law. Yeah, we have our space laws here, and the rest of the world doesn't necessarily agree with them.
So do our space laws only apply in the U.S., but when you get out to space, they don't?
You know, details of this, I think, need to be worked out, Mrs. Future.
Well, you did say that space is like an ocean,
What is the rules beyond international?
Yes, interplanetary.
Right. What are the interplanetary rules? That's a whole new realm for legal beagles to investigate and make up stuff.
Absolutely. We should do a show on that, because as I recall, when people were first starting to sell the names of stars, right, where you could buy a star for someone and pay $100 and send it to them for Christmas and stuff. There was somebody in the United Nations introducing proposals for buying real estate on the moon or on Mars or on known entities that we could conceivably inhabit in the next few decades.
Yes, it's like swampland in Florida.
That's right. High desert on Mars.
Yeah, all you have to do is get there.
That's right.
It's ambiguity of space, is known as, and it goes back, I think the first time we tried to grapple with this issue was 1967 when we had the Outer Space Treaty. That was a Cold War era accord that prohibited national appropriation of celestial bodies.
Oh, okay. So in 1967, we said nobody can just own space. Nobody can own those asteroids and moons and planets.
Yeah, not unlike Antarctica. Space is common ground.
Okay.
And that military development would be extremely limited in space by this agreement. And it was signed by 105 countries at the time.
Oh, in 1967.
Yeah.
So that leaves a lot of countries out. I guess they get to go and figure it out on their own.
Well, yeah. If the Space Force, for example, became real, we'd have to exit the Outer Space Treaty.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
We'd have to get a new treaty that included our very own Space Force?
Something like that. But the Outer Space Treaty noticeably overlooked any reference to ownership of resources.
Oh, okay. So you won't own the asteroid, just all the titanium that you take away from it.
Yeah.
I don't know how's that going to work. I mean, when they came out to the Wild West, you had to stake a claim. You definitely had to own the claim.
Yes, they're trying to look at how ownership of space resources is addressed in the legal framework. And they lay down regulations for their authorization and supervision of the missions, for example.
Oh, okay.
To the craft.
Okay, so whoever's funding the flight gets to decide which laws they're going to use.
That's what they're thinking. Luxembourg's small size may help it take the lead in this new gold rush.
Sure. They can be more agile in responding to the requests of people for novel discoveries in space.
Yeah, yeah. They're forward thinking, and they're hoping that their success will enable private companies to conduct successful space missions that they get a piece of the action on.
Okay.
Yeah. So they
the
also,
new Queen Isabella of space is yeah. Luxembourg,
yeah.
And the Duchy of Luxembourg.
But keep in mind, this is, as I said, this is the future. It hasn't hit fever pitch yet. Space mining, the companies tended to be a little overambitious in their launch schedules. But if the profits start rolling in, then you can bet that Luxembourg will be in the picture.
Okay, you heard it here on Dr. Future.
Yeah. What
big players
I guess
in
a small
space.
Country,
small
you,
countries.
You got to figure out where you can. Well, of course, Britain was a small country and took on the world with their navy.
There you go.
And got
case
resources
in point.
From everywhere. So, in a sense, that's a little historical perspective.
You think someday we're going to say the sun never sets on the space colonies of Luxembourg?
I don't think they have that kind of ambition, at least now. Maybe future Luxembourgians may want that. But right now, I think they just want a piece of the financial pie that might
sure.
come from this.
Okay. Yeah. They'll take a few shipments of gold.
Yeah.
They'll be happy.
I think so. I think they will.
So we can see space better. We've got good pictures of the Milky Way, especially the black hole in the middle of the Milky Way, which looks like a really bright collection of fire. And we have new planets around Jupiter. It's a great week for space.
I think so.
Or at least what we know about it.
The rest of the show, we're going to cover more medical topics. And in the second hour, we're going to have a conversation on the future of stem cells, which I think you'll find quite fascinating.
Yeah. Should we go to a break a little early?
Yeah, let's go to a break early this time, and then we'll just start getting into all our
cool all right, we're just shaking it up, folks.
Okay.
Don't look at your clock. Look at the future. Time for this break on the Dr. Future Show.
This I found quite interesting. There's a number of publications are covering this new study that claims that eating fat is the only cause of weight gain. Eating fat.
Lots of people would like to believe that there's only one cause. Yeah. That would make it so easy.
Comprehensive study. Of course, it was done with mice in Scotland and the Chinese Academy of Sciences in Beijing. But they concluded that only fat caused the mice to gain excessive weight over a long period of time. which could put a nail in the coffin on the longstanding controversial debate on which among several diets in the world is best for avoiding excessive weight gain.
I don't think that the debate will ever be over.
You don't think?
Because the diet programs are as unique as the people who use them. And the studies, they just find what they find. They don't really conclude all
things. Well, before you diss it, let's get into it a little bit more here first.
Okay,
food is made up of three macronutrients, such as carbs, protein, and fat. Carbs, protein, and fat.
That's
carbohydrates,
right.
Protein, and fat. And the goal of the study was to see which among these three macronutrients caused weight gain. And they published in Cell Metabolism. They had 30 different diets that they investigated, each one having different proportions of carbs, protein, and fat.
Okay.
Okay, so they did it with mice because you can't get people to stick to diets for long periods of time. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they concluded that the study on laboratory mice, so that each mouse was made to eat a single diet for 3 months, which is equivalent, they say, to 9 years for humans.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And over the course of the study, they made about 100,000 measurements of the changes in body weight and body fat using a micro MRI machine.
A mouse-sized MRI.
Right. And they concluded that among the food groups, only fat caused weight gain in mice.
So they could eat as much sugar as they wanted.
Yeah.
They could eat as much protein as they wanted. But fat, yeah. That did the damage.
Yeah, that's what they say. The result was unequivocal. The only thing that made the mice get fat was eating more fat in their diets.
Hmm. What happened to the sugar and the protein? Are the carbs and the protein?
Well, let's see. They found that even carbs that contain 30% of calories from sugar, widely believed to induce weight gain, did not have an effect. Sugar and fat, a combination that you find a lot in baked goods and stuff, and pastries, was found not to have any impact more than just fat alone.
Hmm. Well, it sounds like they're attributing the impact to the fat.
Well, they also found that diets with low amounts of protein did not cause the mice to eat more.
Mm-hmm.
That means that there might be no such thing as a protein target.
What is a protein target?
It's having a certain amount of protein that is you need to meet.
Oh, the idea that there's an ideal amount of protein for you to eat. So you can eat anything else and you'll still maintain your weight.
And how does this work? Why would fat be the one? They say that when you eat fat, it stimulates the reward center in the brain, which causes you to eat more. You eat more. So your reward center is stimulated and want you eat more.
Hmm. Okay. That's kind of intuitive, I suppose. I always like to eat butter, for instance, on toast.
But keep in mind, this was done with mice. That's the biggest limitation.
Mm-hmm.
But they're often used in lab experiments where humans pose a challenge. They have similar physiologies and metabolism patterns. It's unlikely that a study of this scope will be done on humans because, as we mentioned earlier, it's hard to get a controlled diet for 9 years.
Well, you know, Dr. Future, the idea that fat is bad for you is supposedly one of these myths that's been debunked lately by a lot of nutritional alternative views.
Right.
Of course, excess of anything is going to be bad for you, but, you know, you do need your healthy fats. Maybe you don't need most of your calories coming from fats, but you certainly don't want to leave fat out of your diet. I mean, it coats your
nervous
system.
No, you don't want to leave it out. But what
it keeps you moist and flexible. Some people say that arthritis is really a disease that you just don't have. You're drying out, basically, and you don't have enough fat. So
Yeah, I would agree. I'd say just watch how much you eat if you're eating fat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, watch your portion. It seems like the portions is the important thing to pay attention to.
All right, so this article puts you back on the side that fat is bad and staying away from fat is good.
I didn't say bad, no. I say it stimulates the reward centers and makes you want to eat more.
Makes you eat more. Oh, that's the problem.
That's it.
Okay.
All right, so portions
resist.
Become important.
You have to resist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, so that's the download on that.
All right.
There's new SD memory cards up to 2 terabytes of storage.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a new one of Future promising 128 terabyte memory cards. Oh my God, 128 terabyte memory cards. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been backing up.
What will you do with that?
I've been backing up my life on hard drives right
now. On the home brain.
And I have about 20 years of video that probably will fit in about 10 terabytes.
Okay.
And these are memory cards with 128 terabytes.
Oh.
Ridiculous.
You can do you and all your friends.
Yeah. No, I can do a lot more. How are we going to use all this data, all this storage? My guess is that we're going to expand beyond video. We're going to get into virtual reality, 3D virtual world reality.
That's right.
Holographic memory systems.
Yeah.
This sort of stuff. It means... It'll probably happen pretty soon. I think the fact that we can store memory will create more and more uses for it.
Sure. Maybe instead of just recording one person's point of view, you'll record all of the avatars who are hanging out together. You'll get all of them at once. So say 10 avatars all bring their own life recordings with them and record the event, and then they're all stored together.
Yeah. The Zoe implant. Remember that?
Yeah. Which movie was that? That was...
Robin Williams film.
Yeah, the editor, right? He was the editor.
2004, remember that? Final Cut. Yeah, that's right.
Final Cut, there we
go.
Final
Cut.
Yeah.
Basically, everyone gets an implant at birth and records everything that they experience. Robin Williams was an editor that then edited your life at the end of your life.
And that's right, to communicate the most loving memories for your bereaved.
And naturally, to make an interesting movie, you run into all kinds of things that people do that maybe you don't want into the final movie. That's the thing there.
All right. So we're just being visited by our guest, who's here a little early for the next hour.
Yeah, yeah, that should be fun.
Hey.
Welcome, Doctor.
Would you like to introduce our guest for a minute?
Sure. In the studio, we have Dr. Duncan McCollum, who is our local chiropractor and into cellular detoxification.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
I saw you when you were on the next show,
uh-huh.
in the room here. You were
on
here talking to the Flight 1080 show, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was working with Dave Michaels talking about some of the books because he's so interested in local history, and I've written a few books too. So.
Oh, yeah, you're a local historian as well?
Well, my family's fifth generation Californian from Salinas, so.
Oh, yeah, I guess
so. Oh, seen it all.
Yeah, lots of good stories back to, you know, Walking Myriad and Dubuque Vasquez and the Gold Rush and all that. Doesn't have anything to do with stem cells necessarily.
No, that's true. That's all right.
A long way, baby.
Yeah. And that's nice to meet you, Mrs. Future. I was telling Michael I remember when there wasn't a Mrs. Future. Rick. How long have you been on this show?
8 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. You haven't been with him the whole time.
Yes,
I have been with him the whole time. I was the board op.
Ah.
I used to talk less.
That's it. That's why.
Yeah, she's doing at least 50% of the talking now.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
sometimes I feel I have something to say.
Yeah, she's good at bouncing things off, as you'll find out yourself
good.
In the second hour, especially as we delve more deeply into these areas of the future of medicine, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we're in what we think of as the medical part of the show, kind of ramping up to talking about stem cells and health and long-term strategies for longevity.
Yeah, like for example, you heard of the Kurzweil AI newsletter?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it looks at future trends that are happening in health science, medicine, things like that. And they're talking about how nanomaterials can mimic nerve impulses.
That's crazy. And I think that's the show I was listening to. You were talking about that. Some nanotechnology when I introduced myself.
Probably so, yeah.
And said that, you know, I was really working with people with stem cells and stuff and that getting their body to create their own stem cells.
Exactly, exactly, yeah. And the cyber element of this is that you can build like a skin, a new synthetic skin for the body that will convey information over a distance so that people can feel each other over a distance and share information.
That is unbelievable.
Or feel like they are somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like if you were wearing a suit, you could be on Mars and you would feel what it would be like to pick up an object there, things like that. With some of the newer material, like these nanomaterials mimicking nerve impulses, they'll literally feel like you are touching, picking up things.
Wow, that sounds pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The simulated worlds are all about fooling your senses so that you can extend your reach and extend your perception and basically collapse distance.
Did you see the movie Avatar?
Yeah.
That's an example of that kind of thinking.
You know what's really crazy is I actually started a sci-fi book called The Fracturing, and it takes place in the 24th century, and it has to do with this type of subject where you could put some, they would implant something, and then you would be able to live in a different dimension or have all these different experiences. And one of my nephews is really big in gaming. And he said, Duncan, that's not very far away. It's going to just be, it's not even going to be fiction anymore. It's going to be true. I better write it real quick.
That's right.
Before
Pave
there's
the
no
way.
Mystery anymore.
Right.
Or maybe become a screenplay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, science fiction does tend to lead science fact,
We
invent the things that we imagine.
So I'm glad you came in, because when the story that we just discussed had to do with eating fat as being the only cause of weight gain. Have you heard of that study recently? It was done with mice, and they studied three major food groups and found that only fat actually caused weight gain. And they say that that was because it stimulated the reward center of the brain and made you want to eat more.
Hmm.
Not carbs, not sugar, but fat.
I guess it all depends on which studies you're looking at, because we know right now so much about the microbiome.
Yes,
which
that's
is
another.
In our gut. That's all over us. We have like 100 trillion in our digestive system alone, 50,000 in our mouth. And I think you guys know this, but we are really now looking at treating the microbiome to get people well. And for so long, it's like we look at the human body, the human organs, in order to treat disease. But now we know, since with the interface with our body is actually these microbiome.
Which, yes, we've heard that fecal implants actually work.
You know, Dr. Pompa, who I work with.
Yes, I watched some of the videos.
He actually is. I haven't done it myself, but a lot of the colleagues that I work with have.
Oh, okay. Well, let's discuss this and other things with Dr. Duncan McCollum after the news break at the top of the hour here. You're listening to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. We look forward to chatting you more deeply.
Great, thanks.
Okay.
All right, folks. So that's the end of the first hour.